Mysterious, oh radio, listening to Society Award Show.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society's 2023 Award Show. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua. And our award show opening theme was created and performed by our mysterious listener, Brent, a.k.a. Vic Villari. Thank you, Brent.
Today, we're looking back at the classic and not-so-classic old-time radio stories featured on the podcast in 2023.
We'll tally votes from our Patreon supporters and your mysterious old hosts in order to declare a final winner and loser.
At the end of the show, we will present the Porky and Mike Loving Cup, named after the anti-heroes from the Quiet Please classic, The Thing on the Forble Board, to the very best old-time radio selection of 2023.
We will also present the Singing Gorilla Medal of Dishonor, named after the ill-fated ape from the dark fantasy disaster spawn of the subhuman, to the very worst old-time radio selection of 2023.
The nominees in order of appearance on the podcast are
Junkyard from X-1. The crew of a stranded spaceship lose their memories one by one until finally nobody can remember how to fly the ship. The solution? Get drunk.
Come As You Are from The Price of Fear. Vincent Price reluctantly attends a costume party and makes awkward small talk with a ghost.
Number 31 from The Adventures of Ellery Queen. What is the mysterious connection between overseas smuggling and the disappearance of a butler? Ellery Queen thinks it's the number 31.
The 13th Sound from Suspense. A wife is plagued by the sound of her murdered husband's fingernails.
The Hideout from Dark Venture. When a game of cards turns deadly, a two-bit crook finds himself caught between the cops and the mob.
Little Jake from Pete Kelly's Blues. A mysterious envelope leads to brutal violence, unspeakable tragedy, and at least one jazz tune.
The Devil's Workshop from Inner Sanctum. A troubled artist believes his wax figure is alive.
Milwaukee Deep from Sears Radio Theater. A string of missing ships leads a Coast Guard officer to an island of ingenious pirates and angry gods.
0 Hour from Suspense. A children's game called Invasion becomes frighteningly real as the clock ticks closer to 0 Hour.
The Powder River Kid from Frontier Gentlemen. The Powder River Kid is wanted dead or alive, and his last wish is that his wife collect the reward.
Split Second from Vanishing Point. A woman leaves her house for a short walk and returns to find the world is not as she left it.
The Island of Ancient Death from The Shadow. Lamont and Margot travel to a Caribbean island to rescue an old friend from her mad scientist husband, who may or may not be a knife-wielding maniac.
The Dark Side of the Mind from Nightfall. Dentist Jeff Robbins and his wife Myrna encounter old friend Carl and invite him over for a visit. However, when Jeff is called away, he discovers startling news connecting Carl to a recent spate of child murders.
Black Tie Affair from Bold Venture. Sailor takes Slate to a party in a rented tux, only to discover that a pair of otherwise innocuous school teachers will do anything to get their hands on Slate's jacket.
Murderous Revision from Suspense. A frustrated radio writer conceives the perfect murder as the perfect radio script.
The Doll from Weird Circle. The creator of a bird-killing doll confesses to the murder of a fortune teller. And it only gets weirder from there.
Double Murder from Big Town. Double Murder in Big Town.
Two Sharp Knives from Suspense. A suspect is found hanged in his cell. Was it murder or suicide?
Donovan's Brain Part 1 and 2 from Suspense. When William Donovan is injured in a plane crash, an unethical doctor seizes on the opportunity to put his mad science to the test.
If a body needs a body, just call Burke and Hare from Crime Classics. Burke and Hare give up body snatching for murder.
Murder in the Script Department from Lights Out. Two typists stay late to finish the latest Lights Out script, only to find themselves locked in and terrorized by an unknown entity.
Long Distance from The Chase. A wife finds evidence of her husband's innocence. Can she reach the governor in time to stay her husband's execution?
The Conspiracy from Murder by Experts. A jealous boyfriend murders his girlfriend during a flood in the hope of washing away the evidence.
Mr. Costello, hero, from X-1. Senator McCarthy, Mr. Costello, travels through space sowing seeds of suspicion and paranoia.
That Ain't No Way to Run a Railroad, from Let George Do It. A millionaire becomes suspicious when his bid to buy a railroad is turned down. Does George Valentine have the harmonica skills to solve the case?
The Crime of Bathsheba Spooner, from Crime Classics. The story of the first woman to be tried and executed for murder in the United States.
The Enormous Radio, from CBS Radio Workshop. A married couple's new radio picks up conversations from other apartments in their building. The thrill of voyeurism turns to existential dread as the couple realizes their own life is as small and petty as the ones they hear on the radio.
The Diary of Sophronia Winters, from Suspense. A naive, middle-aged newlywed discovers her husband is a madman bent on murdering her for a crime she didn't commit.
Death Prowls at Night, from The Shadow. Margot falls under the spell of a werewolf and tells The Shadow where he can stick his power to cloud men's minds.
No Grave Can Hold Me, from The Mysterious Traveler. The great Rondolfo vows to return from the dead and murder the judge and jury who sentenced him to death.
The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, from NBC Presents Short Story. The classic tale of a man who unleashes his dark impulses in the form of an alternate personality.
Carmilla, from Nightfall. A mysterious and alluring stranger insinuates herself into a sheltered young woman's home and heart.
The Cabin, from Gunsmoke. A snowstorm forces Marshall Dillon to seek refuge in an isolated cabin. Unfortunately, the cabin is already occupied by a pair of desperate killers and their hostage.
The Black Room, from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. A man is arrested for unspecified crimes and locked in a completely black room. Is it an experiment, a punishment, or an uplifting message of hope disguised as a Kafkaesque nightmare?
The Man in Black, from Hall of Fantasy. A walk in the park turns sinister when two friends are confronted by a desperate woman in search of someone she calls the Man in Black.
The Man Who Stole a Planet, from Quiet Please. The title says it all.
The Crisis of Dirk Diamond, from Suspense. A comic strip artist plumbs the depths of his psyche to create a new villain and unleashes Freddy, an imagined tormentor from his childhood.
Jack Frost, from Candy Matson. Candy is hired to find the missing Jack Frost, a department store Santa's helper.
The Signalman, from Seeing Ear Theater. Two guys talk about trains and ghosts. One of them dies.
Now let's hear from one of our Patreon supporters, Evan.
There's a cabin in the pines, hidden in the wildwood.
Hi, I'm Evan, a proud longtime supporter of Morals on Patreon, and here's my very brief reviews for the best and worst of 2023. By far my favorite episode was The Cabin, from Gunsmoke.
Out of the way, I'll be a fool. All right, stranger, hands in the air.
Everything I like about Gunsmoke is dialed up to 11 here. The grit, the realistic pacing and dialogue, and the surprisingly dark characters.
Don't laugh at me, Hack! Now stop it! I don't like laughing. You know that, Hack. And don't you do it no more. I got ways.
I would describe it as The Hateful Eight, but Gunsmoke. And if that isn't the kind of quick capsule soundbite to intrigue potential listeners, I don't know what is. My pick for the worst? Well, apologies to Tim, but it's The Doll from The Weird Circle. I'm normally lukewarm on this show in general, but this episode suddenly careens towards disaster when all of my personal pet peeves collide in one perfect story.
It will be a rare sight, Wondersmith. To see a wooden mannequin come alive full of murder and wrath.
In The Doll, I find the dialogue stilted and antiquated. The characters are one-dimensional.
Quiet, quiet. I'll have the bailiff clear the court if this continues.
And the only thing I hate more than a nonverbal character having its actions described in detail by everyone else...
Did you see? He lunged at her. The Doll lunged at Philomel.
Draw out the soul.
Is a human doing a terrible impression of a talking parrot.
Help! Master!
The bird screamed. It shuddered, and and spasms racked its body.
But thanks to Eric, Tim, and Joshua for the incredible year of entertainment, and here's to many more. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Evan.
In addition to our individual panelists, we collected best and worst votes from all our patrons. In the best of category, our patrons chose the following finalists: The Enormous Radio from CBS Radio Workshop, The Cabin from Gunsmoke, Murder in the Script Department from Lights Out, Donovan's Brain from Suspense, Junkyard from X-1, and Zero Hour from Suspense.
And the winner is...
And I got in under him with a fork and lifted him off his feet. And he struggled for a moment like a speared fish and then went limp. And I let him fall.
The Cabin from Gunsmoke.
Our patrons also voted for the worst of 2023. Nominees included Milwaukee Deep from Sears Radio Theater, Donovan's Brain from Suspense, The 13th Sound from Suspense, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde from NBC Short Story, Come As You Are from The Price of Fear, Dark Side of the Mind from Nightfall, and The Signalman from Seeing Ear Theater.
And the winner is...
Holy suffering cats, look at that. It's an enormous stone statue. One of those Indian idols, do you think? Yeah. Why on earth they want to smuggle out something like that? They can't sell that on the black market, can they? It's the size of a house.
Milwaukee Deep from Sears Radio Theater.
Cheryl Teeks is calling me. Gotta have it.
We agree. There's more for your life at Sears. So shop around.
And now it's time to announce the 2023 Mysterious Old Listener of the Year. This honor is bestowed upon a listener who has made a notable impact on the podcast.
And that listener is Dave S. Dave is a longtime listener who we first met through Patreon. He caught our attention with his insightful comments, laconic wit, and occasional bursts of flash fiction.
Over the years, Dave has become a familiar face at our Zoom happy hours and a much appreciated contributor to my Mysterious Old Book Club. His keen and pithy observations enrich every topic, whether it be radio drama, literature, history, or random tangent.
Dave's fans are not limited to the three of us. He is a popular presence on our Discord channel, where he shares his thoughts, knowledge, and dependably fantastic book recommendations.
Due to visual impairment, Dave recently began posting short recordings to Discord as an alternative to voice typing. We'd like to share one with you today. It was recorded in response to a Discord discussion about the difficulty some of us have explaining to others our undying love of old-time radio.
Why do we listen to old-time radio? A couple of reasons. One long, one short. In the first place, it's a time machine. Do you know how it is whenever you listen to a song on the radio and it's coming to you from the 60s or 70s or 80s, however old you are now, it'll take you back to a time when you were listening to the radio a lot. And you'll remember all the things that were happening. And you'll remember what the country was like then and what your life was like then and all the friends you had that maybe you haven't seen in 40 or 50 years. It all comes back. It's just like that. It's a time machine. But then with old-time radio, you go back even further to a time that existed before you were born, when your parents and grandparents were alive and they were gathered around the radio listening to this stuff. In my mind, I can see my mom and dad, who hadn't met each other yet. They're still living at home with their parents. They're still kids. My dad sitting in front of the radio listening to Little Orphan Annie and Nick and Sade and the things he enjoyed. And my mom's listening to The Shadow and I Love a Mystery. And I remember being a kid in the back seat listening to them talk about old-time radios and thinking, God, I would love to listen to that stuff. And now I have a chance. The other thing that's funny, I was talking to my youngest grandson. He says, why do you listen to that stuff? I said, because they're all ghosts. I said, you can listen to them, but everybody that was connected with it is long since on the other side of the grass. They're all dead. But at the same time, in the middle of the night, you can pick up your phone, you can dial into the internet, and you can call up Humphrey Bogart, you can call up Cary Grant or Jimmy Stewart or Virginia Gregg and Peter Lorre, and they can talk to you in their own voices, in their own way, in the performances they gave. You're hearing their voices of the dead, telling stories in the dark. And what could be better than that? And he's been a big fan ever since. He calls it walking in the graveyard at night. And I kind of like that.
So let's raise a glass of whatever you're drinking to Dave, our 2023 Mysterious Old Listener of the Year.
And now let's hear from last year's Listener of the Year, Amy.
In some secluded rendezvous that overlooks the avenue, with someone sharing a delight, chat, this and that, and cocktails for two, as we enjoy a cigarette.
Hey everybody, this is the Crazy Cocktail Lady. The guys asked me if I could make a recording of my least favorite and my most favorite out of last year's episodes. I picked the Enormous Radio as my least favorite episode.
Irene, don't you want to hear the workshop? It's a pretty good show.
Oh, I feel like music, don't you?
Not because it was done poorly or the story wasn't done well, but because of a more human connection to it. The fighting in the episode caused my blood pressure to rise. It made me feel like I did as a kid listening to my parents fight.
Why are you so holier than thou all of a sudden?
The episode highlights the worst in humans, the love of gossip, addiction to drama, passivity over responsibility.
Thanks for a lousy breakfast and indigestion. I may see you tonight and I may not.
Go on, get out! Go on, stay out all night!
Maybe I will.
Now there's a line from Pollyanna, I'm gonna paraphrase it here. If you look for the bad in people, you shall surely find it. And this touched me as a kid, to always have empathy and look for the good in people. This episode centers on looking for the bad, and it leaves the listener assuming the worst in the wife.
It's like looking in windows. You know you don't have to listen to this sort of thing. You can just turn it off.
Did she provoke her husband because her radio has been taken away? Does she find other ways to intrude on the private lives of others? What about her kids? Will this cause them to be caught up in her addiction? I don't like being steered into looking for the bad, and this one felt like I was railroaded into it. And one final thought I had about this episode is that it reminds me that, you know, of Facebook and how we all have the Enormous Radio in our pockets. And we really should be cognizant of that going forward in our lives.
And Mrs. Melville has heart trouble and some woman is playing around with the superintendent. It's disgusting.
Now, the opposite is my favorite, The Black Room.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
It's always had a personal connection to me in several ways. It was one of the first episodes I heard outside of listening just live as a kid. It actually came out before I was born, even. It's been one of my favorite for years, and it's one that I often suggest to people that they listen to when they ask me about old-time radio. And yes, don't hate me, it's outside the definition of OTR. But, you know, we have to start somewhere.
It's black.
That's why it's called the Black Room.
Well, switch on a light.
There is no light. Once I close this door, there'll be no light of any kind.
So this one touches on a human condition that I've always been fascinated with. Humans have a loneliness inside of them.
Are you there? Are we both in here? Well, say something. Are you here?
And until the lockdowns during COVID, I really never knew just how deep and dark that loneliness can get. And we even had a happy hour focused on the loneliness factor in humans. And it's been one of my favorite happy hours of all time.
I see a light. I see light. A very little light. Oh, thank you. Thank whatever, whoever you are for this little bit of light.
I listen to it and it reminds me to smile at people, to be kind to people, because you never know how much that smile and kindness means until it's been taken away, like with our subject in The Room.
It's true. There's no end to it. There's no end, no end to the shocks and the suffering and the cruelty and the horror, no end to it. When you think you've borne it all, there's more and more and more!
The tiny connection is that what saves him, bolsters him, and then it is taken away and he becomes bitter and begins to despair. But then the hope reappears with the mouse's children.
Oh, you're not Mr. Mouse at all. You're Mrs. Mouse. Your mother mouse.
You're also left with that hopefulness that our subject will be able to, get on with his life if he ever gets out of the room.
How does a man survive 26 days in the black room?
He needs to care for some living soul.
Now, you have the choice as a listener to focus on the bad, the experiment, the cruelty, the testers, or anything else, or that spark of light within the room. I like storytellers who trust me as a listener, and I feel like this story trusts me with my own personal, individual, and unique thoughts. Thank you, everybody, and I hope you have a great year this year.
Thanks, Amy.
Next, we present a segment called Know Your Hosts. We posted a series of autobiographical facts on Patreon and asked our supporters to match the facts with the host or hosts. For listeners who are not Patreon members, here are the questions. Feel free to play at home.
You've heard of foolish questions, and no doubt you've wondered why a person...
Who was once employed proofreading personal ads?
Who wrote for a short-lived, nationally syndicated educational sketch comedy television program for kids?
Who won a regional Emmy?
Who was screamed at by Bill Murray?
Who has appeared on stage 100% buck naked?
Who was a national merit scholar?
Who was arrested for disorderly conduct and resisting arrest?
I just wanted you to see it. Now I'll take it all away. Now there's a question that you'll hear most every day.
And here are the answers to those questions. Who was once employed proofreading personals ads? First, I'll give you guys the results of what our listeners voted for our Patreon members. 36% thought I was the correct answer. 34% thought it was Joshua. 25% Eric. 5% thought it was all of us. So a fairly even split. The correct answer is me. I used to proofread personals ads.
Did you add saucier bits?
It depended on the newspaper. I never was called on to add saucier bits, but I read these for newspapers all across the country, and in some of the more conservative areas, you had to
desauce
a lot. And in some, like we did LA Weekly as well, where we just had to, like, this is just kind of flat out sex work that we need to sort of put a little Vaseline on the lens here to hide that,
or basically Vaseline anywhere.
Yes.
Did you ever get one, look at it, just take it, put it in your pocket, and say, no need for us to publish that. I will be making that phone call tonight.
No. But technically, their focus was on voicemail, because this was a long time ago, and that was the exciting new technology of you could call someone and leave a message for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the personal ad aspect was just kind of the excuse to use this technology.
Pay well?
Yeah, it was okay.
But work from home?
No, I had to go into the office. Although I did one time just flat out fall asleep on the floor. It was a good crew I was working with. They covered for me.
Love for sale. Advertising young love for sale.
Our next question. Who wrote for a short-lived, nationally syndicated educational sketch comedy television program for kids... the results that we got from the votes was 45% of our voters thought it was me, 25% thought Joshua, 20% thought Eric, 9% thought we all did that.
Wasn't me.
It was me. I did it. Actually, along with Eric's wife.
That's correct.
Shannon. Yeah, it was incredibly short-lived. It was called Mad About, and the idea is that every season you would be mad about some other exciting topic like financial responsibility, which was what the first season was
about. So, like,
about.
Enthusiastically interested and not like I'm really mad about financial responsibility.
Yeah. Right.
And
these sketches had so little to do with financial
responsibility. Right.
And like any TV show, it was a big group of writers. Because of my day job work schedule and when we got our assignments and when we had to bring our first draft in, it involved me working an opening shift, going to the meeting, working an opening shift the next day, and then staying up all night to get a bunch of sketches done and then turning them in. So it was really exhausting. And out of like 8 or 9, I think 2 or maybe 3 of them ended up in the show.
If I remember correctly, it wasn't as exhausting as trying to get paid for it.
That was also hard.
Tracking down that check.
So if you think educational sketch comedy for children is lucrative, you're wrong. Glamorous, though.
Once I lived the life of a millionaire, spending my money I didn't care.
Our next question, who won a regional Emmy? This is what our voters thought. 50% thought that was Eric. 25% thought Joshua. 11% thought me. 14% thought we have all won a regional Emmy.
Yeah, we were a news team. And weirdly, Tim was on sports.
Here in role-playing game news.
Well, the 50% were right.
Yeah.
It was me, Eric. Yeah, I won a regional Emmy for a show that ran for about 3 years on a local station in Minneapolis called The Big Bad Movie. And the reason this came about was that this local station bought a package of movies, like 6,000 of them for like a penny. I'm exaggerating, but they just got all these movies from this distributor and they said, you know, for this low amount, here's your filler for any time of the day, week that you don't have, you know, you can put on these movies. And they were also terrible. They decided that they needed to hire a host to host them to give them some kind of context or comedy. And they called it The Big Bad Movie. I auditioned. I got it. I did it for 3 years. So the interstitials were what I wrote, which was about 20 a show where they'd come out of break and into break. And I would comment or have sketches, hired a lot of my friends. We did a lot of recreate. We did a lot of crazy stuff. And then 9/11 happened, and I went to work to record The Big Bad Movie. And it turns out that in that panic of, hey, the world's coming to an end, so let's save as much money as possible, the company that I worked for immediately started firing people that day.
Wow.
That day. Wow. They made budget cuts because they were on top of it, I guess. And the guy commenting on the movies was first to go. That was...
I mean, you're like probably making the most money in the company.
And I was paying pretty decent. They were paying me a writing fee, a hosting fee, a directing fee. I mean, it was paying well.
Costuming, makeup.
And they let me have run of the place from midnight to 6, so I was by myself. But anyway, he says, you know, we're letting you go. The world's coming to an end, and we got to save money, and you are the most unnecessary thing that's ever been invented. And I
that's
said...
on my business card now.
And I said to him, but I won an Emmy. And he said, yeah, it's a regional Emmy.
Can't get no work, can't draw no pay. Unemployment getting worse every day. Nothing
all right,
to eat,
our next question. Who was screamed at by Bill Murray? Here's what our respondents thought. 52% are pretty sure that that was Eric. 23% thought Joshua got screamed at by Bill Murray. 16% thought it was me. And 9% thought all of us had been screamed at by Bill Murray.
I wish. That would have been a great story. Well, once again, everybody's right. The majority's right. It was me. I was the announcer for the amazing St. Paul Saints baseball team, minor league baseball run by and owned by Mike Vec. Really fun, amazing job. A great, just the St. Paul Saints are famous. And they're also partially owned by Bill Murray. I don't know if they still are. And I was the announcer, which really was announcing batters and stuff, but being paid to be as funny as possible to make the game as more interesting as you possibly could. And so I was given carte blanche to say and do whatever I wanted. Much like The Big Bad Movie, no one was watching. Like, we don't know what you're doing. So I was given a blank slate at the Saints. Like, do what you want. And I did a lot of crazy things, and it was really fun. And Bill Murray, couldn't wait to meet him. Like he was going to come, and he came a couple times a year in my first year, and he comes up to the press box, I need to clarify something to be really fair. So he starts yelling at me. The hell are you playing? What are you doing? Da, da, da. All these things. And I took it for that 20 seconds of staring at him, and I pointed at, and I said, these are all the CDs I have, these six, and I have a CD player. And he went, oh my God, I'm so sorry. So to back this up, he yelled and then immediately realized, oh, this isn't your, he thought I was so bad at my job that I was not doing anything. And I was like, I don't have any equipment. Handed me a huge handful of cash.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
Said, go buy some CDs, go buy a multi-disc CD player. Made me laugh and said, bring me the change. And I went shopping, and overnight, we could do a lot more out there. Of course, within a year of that, technology took over and you could play things off a computer, you know. But he was mad because it was what I was doing was terrible until he realized, oh, why do you only have six CDs? And it was like jock jams, like the, you know, like the CDs I had. Like I'm playing the same songs because I can only get one song in this thing at a time. So anyway, so if Bill Murray or anybody else listening, yeah, he yelled at me and then apologized because okay. So it wasn't.
So the question should have been, who's been yelled at by Bill Murray and then given money?
Yes.
That makes it sound like a service.
Yes.
Bill Murray also told me, hey, you're very funny.
Aww.
Yeah. Weird. And I left my body. It was weird because, and then my response is true story. Cause you know, you're freaking out like, oh my God, that's great.
You are too.
I said, you are. I think you're funny too. And he said, yeah, I know.
Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars.
Next question. Who has appeared on stage 100% buck naked? I respond, it's guest. 32%, all of them. That tracks. 27% thought me. 23% Eric. 18% thought Joshua.
Should I be insulted by that? That I'd be the least likely to appear naked?
There's no winning.
You're right. This is a bad question.
And technically, everyone's right.
All of us have appeared 100% naked on stage.
At different shows.
Nope.
You two are in the same show.
Yes.
I've appeared so many times naked on stage that I have probably forgotten more times I've appeared naked right? on stage than can remember.
We do it for the art and the tips.
I've done it once. And my future
Bill
wife.
Bill Murray yelled at you.
And my future wife.
Bill Murray's like, here's some money. Bring me the change.
That was one of the first times Shannon ever saw me.
Yep. Aww. I know. It's the first time I ever heard of Eric, even heard his name, because I was, well, so was Tim. We were in this show, London After Midnight. We were looking for a new actor, and Shannon was essentially like, hey, I saw this guy naked in a show. I think I'm going to cast him. tell us more. But I do think, should take a moment to contextualize this nudity that did not make a lot of money as Chippendale dancers
no,
or anything like that. These were in theatrical.
I mean, we were Chippendale dancers. We did make a lot of money.
what I think is interesting about this is Eric is the only one who's appeared naked in theater drama.
Drama, yeah.
Where you have a naked drama body, but Tim and I only have naked comedy bodies because we only appeared naked on stage,
right? The script called for it because we wrote the script and it called for it.
Yes,
because mine was a very sad, horrifying moment for this man the character is playing.
Oh, okay. So it was
sad, horrifying moment for this audience.
Yeah, it was not a pleasant thing. So when I was naked, it wasn't like naked or funny or anything. Penis. It was terrible.
I mean the bare necessities or Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities.
Our next question, who was a National Merit Scholar? 80% of our respondents thought Joshua. 14% thought me. 7% thought all of us. And this is the only category where one response didn't get any answers. No one thought Eric by himself was a Merit Scholar.
Ouch. Ow. Ow.
7% thought all of us.
7% you're 7% stupid. 7%
thought Eric looked on our papers.
Yeah, well, it's hard to be mad at them because they're right. It wasn't me.
The correct answer is me.
Yes.
And in fact, this whole process of these questions, it might just be an excuse for me to say, hey, 35 years ago, I did pretty good on some standardized tests. So I
and then
just...
everything went downhill from there. Next thing he knows, he was naked on stage begging for money.
I was a national merit scholar.
I was approached by a fellow high school student to take his SAT for him.
Was it Eric?
It was not Eric.
I didn't take the SATs or the ACTs.
Tim wasn't around.
Still got into college.
I declined, but you know, not because I so value the sanctity of the SAT integrity as much as I thought, I'd get in so much trouble.
Yeah. Oh, I bet you were scared of getting in trouble as a kid.
Yes. those are the two versions of, like, I'm so scared. I think there's some sort of sting operation. and also the weighing, like, the pros and cons of, I might get maybe $30, but it could ruin my life forever. So I'll take the not doing this.
Right.
I didn't actually get an amount of money. Like, if he'd said, like, $40,000, like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know who I went to high school with that have $40,000.
I did take people's ACTs for $30.
Yeah.
And nobody got in.
Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry and cry.
And our final question, who was arrested for disorderly conduct and resisting arrest? 52% thought Eric. 23% thought me, 16% thought all of us, and 9% thought Joshua.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was me.
It was Joshua.
I feel like that one you can figure out. Like, who has the biggest opinions
and mouth.
Is the most caustic about it and has no conflict avoidance?
I am a giant conflict avoider, people. The fact that you vote for me is I have never been in trouble ever.
Joshua, at one point talking about this, said, can you imagine Eric resisting arrest?
You're like, arrest me harder. I deserve it.
I know you're just doing your job.
Thank you, sir.
I was in high school, and for really complicated reasons at the time, there was pressure that the police that were at the school were not paying attention to everybody who was doing bad things. And so I hung out with the arty kids outside and ate lunch every day outside. I don't think I ever in high school, even in the winter, I don't think I ever set foot in the actual lunchroom in high school. And the vice principal showed up and told us we could not eat outside anymore. And I argued with him. And somebody grabbed my arm and I wrenched it back and said, let go of me. And it turned out to be the undercover cop who said, you're getting arrested, buddy. And he threw me up against the wall and handcuffed me.
So it was a sting operation.
Who said, just one more thing.
I mean, I was...
Can you take my SAT for me?
An absolute jerk to this vice principal. And I did push back a little on the cop because he didn't identify himself as a cop. He was just grabbing me. But this is the funniest part of the story is he threw me up against the wall, handcuffed me, and as if he's never worked with high school kids before, whispered in my ear, we're going to take the long way to my office so everyone can see you. And I was like, thank you. So he paraded me through high school in handcuffs and like, the music playing in my head, and everybody's head turning in slow motion.
Were a hero.
I was. Like, I could see the kids scurrying to write folk songs about me. And I was charged with the disorderly conduct for having lunch outside and resisting arrest for telling the cop to let go of me. No, the disorderly conduct was my attitude toward the vice principal.
How many years did you do?
I did 2 hours.
In detention?
Yeah. No, in the cell. In the slam? I actually got to ask another inmate.
What are you in for?
I was like, I'm going to take advantage of this.
So when Dragnet did it, they changed your name, right?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
To protect the innocent.
So it's time to announce our patrons who had the most correct answers, and it is in fact a tie. Freighter Greg had 5 correct answers, and he tied with the team of Jeff and Christy.
Ooh, who got 5 right? That's
also
pretty good.
5
out of 7.
Yes.
Wow.
Quite
congratulations.
Good.
What are we going to give them?
We're going to mention them in this episode.
Oh, really?
A few seconds ago.
Great.
Wow. So worth your time.
And there, you also have the option to upgrade your support to the next level as winners.
And it's the fully endowed power to gloat over the rest of your fellow patrons.
Oh, yeah.
Now, before we reveal our own votes for best and worst, let's hear from one last patron, Simon.
Foggy day in London town had me low.
Well, good evening, gentlemen of the morals. This is Simon from across the pond in not-so-sunny England. And I'm here with the votes from the UK jury. So, 12 points for the best episode of 2023 goes to Dark Side of the Mind from Nightfall. I realise this might be a slightly odd choice.
Nightfall.
And it isn't really that I think it's the best episode in terms of quality. It's just Nightfall is the show that started me off on listening to radio horror, and I bought a whole lot of tapes that they put out in England in the late 80s.
No, the tape recorder!
Absolutely fell in love with them, and it was really the starting point of a borderline obsession that I'm carrying on with to today. So, while objectively it's not the best, it is absolutely the one that I enjoyed the most. And finally, Nul Point for the worst episode goes to Junkyard from X-1. I just thought this was mindless and ridiculous and didn't enjoy it in the slightest.
I a ramblin' wreck from Georgia Tech and a heck of an engineer. A ramblin' wreck from Georgia Tech and a heck of an engineer. Woo! Blast off!
Yeah, really not a favourite, that one. But thank you to all of you for being consistently entertaining, and I hope at least some of your listeners recognize the Eurovision reference. Okay, thank you. Bye now.
The sun was shining everywhere.
Thanks, Simon.
And now it's time to reveal our votes.
All right, let's start with going around the horn here and get everybody's worst episode of last year. Does that sound like a good idea?
Yes.
Let's go Tim, Joshua, me for worst of. Does that sound okay?
That sounds lovely.
Tim, what's the worst one we did last year?
I had a really hard time. There was a number of episodes when I was looking over the list. I'm like, that's an option for worst. That's an option for worst. And I went back and revisited, and I could hear myself in our discussions talking about, like, well, it's not bad, but it's got these redeeming features. And I'm like, yes, past me, it does have some redeeming features. You've talked me out of it. So I don't have any runners-up. There's episodes. Jekyll and Hyde is one that was on some patrons' lists that would be... I was looking at for this might be a worst, but it's got some good things in there. So I did not add it to the list, although I just mentioned it, so it's kind of like doing that. Anyway, I just have the one, and it's nobody's surprise. Milwaukee Deep is, if you wrote a 3-sentence description of what that episode is, I'd say, that sounds awesome. I'm so into this. which is the one redeeming quality of it. But then in the actual execution, it's kind of a mess. And as we discussed at the time, part of that is the state of radio at the time.
Correct.
That it's going to be cranked out every day. There's going to be 25 ads in the course of a couple hours. I still never found out what the shell is in a four-piece suit. There's the jacket and the pants and the vest, but I don't know what the shell is.
I remember that.
It really bothers me. And there's just lots of story flaws, that's pacing flaws. It's got all kinds of problems, but lots of episodes we listen to have these flaws, and it's mostly just the structure that it's being forced into that really puts it at the bottom. So Milwaukee Deep is my unsurprising vote for worst.
All right, this one's easy for me this year. It is The Signal Man by Seeing Ear Theater. Hands down for me, because it's the only production we listened to this year that fell below, in my opinion, literal professional standards.
Right.
You know, because Milwaukee Deep was clunky and a below average effort by 1970s radio renaissance standards. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the actors were professional actors. Richard effing Widmark is in this, even though he's just the narrator. I think part of why everyone voted for Milwaukee Deep is because it's 45 minutes long. It's 15 extra minutes of mediocrity that pushes it over some other candidates. But for me, with The Signal Man, it is essentially two people talking.
Yeah.
And if one of them, which is the guy playing The Signal Man, really is way, 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 way below par, that's 50% of the production. I did admire the woman playing the narrator, but it was an unfair thing to make her put that entire episode on her shoulders. So for me, definitely The Signal Man. It stands out to me as a struggle. It wasn't fun bad. The Hall of Fantasy one, The Man in Black, was just a mess. But it was, like a lot of old-time radio, one of those messes that's just ridiculously fun to listen to.
Because it's
and strange things happen that are unexpected because they're mostly incoherent, but they're still unexpected and fun. So, yeah. And I mean, I also picked this one because, frankly, I don't feel like it would be an worst of award show if I didn't pick one of Tim's picks.
Well, for me, here are my runner-ups for worst of. The Doll from Weird Circle. So bad. And also it falls into that category of everything I hate in that old timey language and that Victorian type speaking and all of that. Here's another runner up that, only because I just want to get under Joshua's skin. I put the Powder River Kid in there.
Worst of?
Yeah.
That's just a swipe at me. Not the worst.
No, it's not at all.
No. Okay, good. Yeah, then bring it on. As long as I know it's personal, then it doesn't bother me.
It's just for you, not the quality of the show.
No,
okay, good.
I just wanted to take a shot at you.
It's a tie between all the ones Joshua brought.
Yeah, but I'm fine, but the Frontier Gentleman's dead. That's cruel.
Signalman is way up there, but I have to go with the one I brought to the podcast, which was Milwaukee Deep, and the reason I brought it to the podcast was just so that we could have a Sears Radio Theater finally on the show.
Which just saying out loud is depressing.
Yeah. Sears.
Sears is depressing.
Yeah. It smells like tires everywhere. In Sears stores, you'd be in a clothing section. Smells like tires. Yeah. But
is that what a shell is?
Yes. But the reason I chose Milwaukee Deep over Signal Man was because Signal Man, first of all, is a tradition with us every year, so I know it's Christmas, and so I can't ever get quite mad at that time of year. Also, Milwaukee Deep is like this thing where Scott Bishop would be like, wow, I can't keep track of what's happening. It twists and turns so ridiculously so many times. And plus, Milwaukee Deep also is such a weird name for it, and sounds like a beer that didn't make it.
I would drink that beer.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you would. So, all right. So those are our worst
ear beer.
Two votes for Milwaukee Deep, one for Signalman for worst of the year. Let's move on to the best of the year. Tim,
This one I do have two runners up, and this was super easy to come up with these because I brought them, and I brought them because I really enjoyed them, and I was looking back over the, like, what did I enjoy this last year? Oh, these ones I brought because I really enjoyed them.
Surprise!
Yes, and I am just shamelessly going to pat myself on the back. One was The Conspiracy. Which I know did not necessarily land that well with everyone else, but I had a good time, so that's my runner-up, Conspiracy from Murder by Experts, and the other is The Devil's Workshop from Inner Sanctum, which I like.
Right. So you approach Best Of from an incredibly subjective point of view, as in like...
For runners-up, certainly.
Oh, these were the runners-up. Yes. Okay, it's like, so you're going like, what delighted me the most as a listening experience, which I don't think is the wrong way to approach it at all. I just want to clarify.
And so surprising to me, the one that really took root in me, and, you know, how many ever months, year plus, it's been since then, when I was looking back over that, that's the one. That's my favorite. And it's on nobody's list, unless it's on your guys' list.
Let's see.
Suspense, Two Sharp Knives. That's the one I liked the best. That's my winner. That's my Best Of. Some of that I can re-listen to my reaction to it. And it was like, I like this, but I had some tempered enthusiasm for it. But it really is, it's a crime drama. And it's these complex relationships between people who've known each other a long time. It's it's not the mystery of what's this stranger and I don't know anything about them. Who are they really? It's the people that you know and what don't you know about them. It's this personal, modern, but old story. That's the best I can do.
Well, I will tell you right now, segueing into my Best Of, that Two Sharp Knives made my list as well.
Ah! So
as I would like to judge you,
feel free.
I agree. I'm going to try to keep this as short as I can. But like, for whatever reason, my personal list of Best Of 2023 is very long.
Yeah.
And I think it is reflective of, obviously, the quality of the episodes featured on the podcast in 2023, but also it's the cumulative effect of listening to so much radio drama over the last 8 years. I would think I'd be like tired of it, but I think actually it has broadened my tastes and deepened my appreciation of what good radio drama can be and what it can accomplish. So in some ways I have both a higher bar but also just a longer bar. That doesn't make sense. But so with that in mind, here is my very long short list of Best Of 2023 in order of appearance on the podcast. The 13th Sound from Suspense, Murderous Revision from Suspense, Two Sharp Knives from Suspense, Lots of Suspense, Murder in the Script Department from Lights Out, The Enormous Radio from CBS Radio Workshop, The Cabin from Gunsmoke, and The Man Who Stole a Planet from Quiet Please. And so I didn't even know where to start with this list, so here's how I do this because I'm a super nerd. I broke these down into three categories to sort of better understand what I appreciated about them into basically...
This is why you were arrested.
Yes. Get your hands off me! traditional, meta, and kind of off-brand.
Right.
So traditional, I think, would be Two Sharp Knives and The Cabin, both of which are impeccably produced small s suspense stories. There's nothing unconventional in approach or content, but they represent their respective genres, hard-boiled mystery, western, at peak performance levels, which is why I appreciate them. Great stories, well told. Off-brand is much more subjective, but I would make this the dumping ground for the episodes I love, but that are arguably a little outside the genre scope of this podcast.
Antique radio.
Yeah, the overtly satirical, almost slapstick quality of The Man Who Stole a Planet.
Right,
from Quiet Please. And I think the social and psychological realism of The Enormous Radio.
The Enormous Radio,
So that stretched our parameters a bit. It was worth it, in my opinion. And then there is the meta category, which I think is most of them. The 13th Sound, Murderous Revision, and Murder in the Script Department, which all are works about art.
Right.
They explore themes related to the nature of radio drama or the process of making radio drama or the relationship between the creators of radio drama and the listeners. So I decided I could just cut the off-brand stuff because it's a Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. So
I'm Eric. Know,
I could get rid of those and then still love me a lot of radio dramas. I think because we are a old-time radio show dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories
from the golden
age of radio, part of what appeals to me about a radio drama is how discussion worthy it is, like how much and how long we can talk about it. So that led me toward those meta episodes. And of those three, it's going to piss off a lot of listeners who found it horrifying and annoying. But it is the 13th sound from Suspense, because that just blew me away.
Right.
I had never heard of it until our awesome patron Catherine brought it. And I swear I'll stop talking, but I have to do a little reasoning behind this. I just think it is clever and funny and deceptively complex in its self-awareness. And speaking of Get to the Castle, it just drops you into this story at this high tension point, but then switch gears and sort of does this slow burn as the story and Elliot Lewis as director torturously finds new ways to weaponize radio sound effects one by one. It's essentially a radio drama turned against the listeners in many ways. It's fingernails on a chalkboard transformed into a radio drama. And I think it's as avant-garde in many ways as the microtonal music that inspired it. So I admire it so much. And the lineup. It's Agnes Moorehead.
Yep.
It's William Johnstone, Elliot and Kathy Lewis, who wrote it. And it's just a celebration and a subversion of radio drama at the same time. So I loved it. A big thank you to Catherine again for bringing it.
That makes two for two of our best ofs being audio, our listener suggestions.
Yes.
So, 13 Sound also is something that we performed on stage.
Yes. Well, remember that.
So here are my best of, starting with the runner-ups. What that means is, I just want to mention some shows I really liked. Carmilla from Nightfall, I loved it. Man. Black Tie Affair from Bold Venture, I loved it.
Great.
Jack Frost from Candy Matson, because it was Candy Matson, it was so fun. I loved it. The 13th Sound from Suspense, runner-up. I loved it and we did it. And The Crime of Bathsheba Spooner from Crime Classics was really good and a lot of fun.
Oh, and the Burke and Hare one.
And the Burke and Hare one. All right.
The Powder River Kid.
The Powder River. Oh, you almost got me to say it. Not the Powder River Kid. So those are my runner-ups. So here are my candidates now for best of. First on that list, and these are in order like fifth through first. The Conspiracy from Murder by Experts was just amazing. I love that. And it is top five of the year for sure. It has too much competition, though, to win. Coming in fourth, Split Second from Vanishing Point, which I think I'm alone on that one. But
I like it a lot.
Runner-up.
Yeah, it was a fantastic piece of work from Vanishing Point, and I loved everything about that. Bringing us to third place, which I thought going into this, before I sat down and really re-listened and rethought, this will be the winner. Yeah, because that's how I talk at home. I talk like this. So third place for me was The Cabin from Gunsmoke. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow.
I'm surprised that's third. I thought for sure it would be your favorite. So now I have no idea what your favorite episode is. This is awesome.
First and second, right? It was so close. It was so close. But I had to put in second place as the runner-up, Long Distance from The Chase.
Oh.
It was so well done. And here's why. Here's why it's in second place. Because The Chase, that's overachievement. They're fine. They do fine work, right? But if it's suspense, you're expecting something, right? You're expecting suspense level or Fear on Four, whatever. You know, like we know, you're really good. Chase is always like, sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it's terrible. They don't have an expectation to do something at the level that is extraordinary. It was an extraordinary piece of audio drama that even today, and I said at the time, it is derivative of Sorry, Wrong Number, and I still say I like it better than Sorry, Wrong Number. From a suspenseful standpoint, I said it in the podcast, I'll say it again. I think even though it's derivative and kind of the same thing, the tension is better and more palatable and disturbing in this episode. So that's my runner-up.
Awesome.
Which leads me to my winner for the year.
Signalman.
The Signalman. Best episode of suspense I ever heard. And that was beating out some that I love dearly. But Two Sharp Knives is absolutely the best thing that we did this year. And it was close. It was close. But Two Sharp Knives, I mean, I love On a Country Road. And you guys know my suspense episodes that I, oh, that was genius. And I love them. But this was just beautiful. And for everything that Tim said, all the reasons, I was enamored with it. And it was really close between that and Long Distance from The Chase. And actually, all five of those that I just mentioned, those top five, wow, that was a really hard thing. But when Tim started this and said, you guys probably don't even have this on your list, Two Long Knives, I'm over here going, that's also my pick.
So,
yeah. Yeah, it made it into my final list.
It was really good.
It's and that was a recommendation as well from Jessica.
Yeah.
Good job, patrons.
Yeah, right?
You guys should be doing this podcast. Well, now it's time to tally our votes.
Oh, okay, here we go.
I mean, you should do the podcast and still pay us money.
Okay.
I want to be really clear about that. So, I think this happened another year, but patrons who have longer memories than we do should let us know. But it, for best of, is a tie.
Old man Camsley, Ben's father, used to have a saying, to a sharp knife comes a tough steak. Well, sorry you did it, Wally. I always liked you.
I know you did, Scott. I was counting on that.
Belle, don't let all this make you bitter. There are a lot of good men in the world.
So they say. So long, Marshal.
So long, Belle.
Two Sharp Knives in the Cabin. So traditional meat and potatoes.
Yeah, storytelling. Yeah.
Genre.
Yeah.
Stuff one.
And yeah, The Cabin deserves to be in that list for sure.
And worst of, easily running away with this humiliation and embarrassment.
The cracks in those brand new walls weren't the result of shoddy materials. The Mayans never left the Yucatan at all. Their spirits are still here.
Milwaukee Deep.
Nice.
From Smells Like Tires Radio Theater.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. And we'll be back next week with another old-time radio episode and discussion.
Who knows? Maybe it will be the best of 2024.
Or the worst. Until then.
Look out!
Phones off.
Yeah.
Pants on.
Yes.
Let's go.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and
venereal disease.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Mysterious
Sorry,
Old...
Sorry, I was moving my paper around.
Welcome.
I'll try one more
welcome.
Time. Try it again. Do it.
Welcome.
Testing. 1, 2, 3. Testity, test, 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 test. Testing.
Oh, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay. Tim?
There was this TV show called BJ and the Bear about a trucker who had a co-pilot who was a chimpanzee.
No. Orangutan.
Orangutan. Was it?
Was it? Wait. I thought it was... No. Was it a chimp?
I thought it was a chimp.
Really tall one?
That might have been Lobo, the sheriff, who got his own spinoff show.
With an orangutan?
He might have had an orangutan.
Today we return to the listener library for a suggestion from our mysterious patron, Tim.
Tim is a generous supporter of the mysterious old... I forgot the name of this podcast.
The program ran on...
Well, now I'm going to find out. Here we go.
Matt Kessinger.
What kind of monkey was on BJ and the Bear?
Are you just thinking out loud?
Well, no, I didn't ask that.
That's going to be the tag of the...
What kind of monkey was on BJ and the Bear? Don't just give me monkeys. Ready?
Yeah, my drift control is on.
That's my favorite Fast and the Furious movie.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an... Sorry. I know this from by heart. I was about to set this down, and I was like, where does light come from? That's a good question.
How do magnets work?
I'm pretty sure it was a chimpanzee. If you're talking about the TV show, it was the movie with Clint Eastwood.
Who BJ had an orangutan, and the Bear.
Right?
That was, yeah, Every Which Way But Loose.
An orangutan.
Chimp. Chimp.
Settled. Sound check done. Ape-related questions answered.
Litton also served as the show's host, Fate, whose distinctive qualities are...
We're good. Oh, I'll let you chew.
Okay, I'm going to plug here then while you're just masticating over there.
Could it just be chewing? Why does that be gross?
That's the question I was going to ask you.
All right.
I mean, if we're recording it, you're masticating.
Bacon.
Welcome to the masticating old radio listening society.
Why does it have to be masticating?
See, this is like, why does it have to be gorillas? Because it can be gorillas.
What's... I'm so sorry, you guys.
Did you just space out? Did you hear anything we just read?
The general plot of this again. Why am I blanking?
The disowned daughter who...
Thank you.
Was sent out
Got it. Okay, right. Just had that... I was conflating it with the suspense.
She had an orangutan that froze to death and then just
middle finger up and its tongue
going up to the window and giving the kid the finger.
In Sheckley's obituary, the New York Times contrasted. Nope. In Sheckley's obituary, the New York Times contrasted. No. In Sheckley's obituary, the New York Times contrasted the Sheckian. Oh, what the case?
The structure of this, the premise of the overall. Oh, damn it! It's going to make me crazy. I'm so sorry.
Peppermint.
not helpful.
Gazpacho.
Still not helpful.
I'm hungry.
Still not helpful.
He brought a youthful jocularity to the monkey. I got cheese.
Today we are thanking our upper tier supporters with. The Beast with Five Fingers from the BBC Radio 4 series, Fear on 4.
I momentarily read that as Breast with Five Fingers.
Scraps back.
Fear on 4 aired on... what's coming up next?
I don't know.